It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 270. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And we got a 2019 Phillies preview. That's right. This is going to be our preview episode, guys. We're going to give you our predictions on the 2019 season as the Phillies are wrapping up spring training down in Clearwater. We'll let you know who we think is going to go to the playoffs this year, what we think the Phillies are going to do, who's going to win some of the major awards, and some other fun Phillies-related predictions for 2019. We'll get into some stuff that's going on with our pals up north, the New York Mets. All kinds of great team chemistry, team building stuff going up there with the Metropolitans. And we'll give you some final thoughts as spring training is wrapping up some decisions the Phillies are making here over the last few days as they're getting their 25-man roster together. Joining me, as they always do on Sunday night, is Justin Clue, the head guy at The Good Fight. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Hey, Justin, how are you, buddy?
You know, today I went to set the spring training game threads on The Good Fight for the rest of the week, and I realized there was just the two left from today and tomorrow. And I got to tell you, that was pretty startling. Like, not that it hasn't felt like it's been a long time. It's more that because it's felt like such a long time, I forgot that this would come to an end.
Yeah, the spring training games, they always seem, and poor Nick Williams, and Liz Rocher also joining us from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz and her excellent work at Liz Rocher on Twitter. Liz, did you catch a Nick Williams interview today? He was clearly miserable, and he was talking about the allergies that he's suffering down in Florida. These guys just want it to end, man. It gets to this point, they just want to come up north and want it to end.
Yeah, it's hard to blame them. Like, you know, allergies, they haven't been home in a while, you know, they're in this weird, like, Florida's weird, man, so let them go back home.
Did you guys, by the way, do the Florida man birthday thing? That's been sweeping social media?
That's minus some kind of anti-Semitic crime.
Oh, no.
mine was a man with missing a part of his head committing arson.
Oh, my gosh. Mine was boring by comparison. Mine was just a guy knocked off a liquor store. I mean, it was pretty benign. So
my fiance's was something about someone got a body part bitten off by an alligator, crocodile, whatever.
Yeah, now that's Florida man right there. That's a good one. That's one of the few social media crazes over the last few months that I actually really enjoyed, because Florida is just an unbelievable cesspool. It's just fantastic. And the fact that these baseball players are all down there, and it's what's funny is that some of these guys get down there really early. Like, some of these guys were down there before Odubel Herrera was down there before pitchers and catchers showed up, and which was great to see. But you just know that at this point, they're so close to the opening bell. They're so close to the season starting as we record this on Sunday evening, March 24th, that, you know, I was just watching Nick Williams. Like, that dude is miserable. I mean, not only has he lost his starting job on the team, this is also killing his allergies. Can we not get these guys just need to come up north right now? And we're going to talk about
my friend.
Sorry,
is from
go ahead,
Florida. My friend is from Florida. She said a relative of hers lives across the street from the graveyard where they dump the circus animals that have died.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Fun little Florida for you.
How is that a thing? Gosh. Are circuses are still a thing?
If you ever have wondered with a childlike sense of awe what happens to the elephants when they get too old, Florida has the answer.
All right. I would also like to make a comment about how incredibly unnecessary the upcoming live-action Dumbo movie is. Dumbo scarred me as a child.
Yeah.
It's a terrible movie. I don't understand why we need it in live action.
I just wonder, are they going to reenact the psychedelic trip that Dumbo went on in the animated version?
They must.
Are they going to reenact the part where his caged mother is, like, rocking him back and forth? Like, why do children need that? My God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why they're doing any of these live action. I mean, we all know
Aladdin
because they could make a ton of money doing it. But, you know, as an idea, it's just like you stop and think, why? This doesn't make it more legitimate.
No, let's just put if you really want your kids to experience Dumbo, then I guess you could have them watch the original. But I'm with you, Liz. I think I saw that once as a kid. I haven't watched it again. I've only watched Bambi the one time. I don't need that. I don't need that kind of trauma in my life.
You know, the live action Lion King looks like it might be interesting, but I'm a sucker for the Lion King. So,
you know, the problem with Lion King for me was it came out right after Aladdin, and I thought it was going to be funny, and it wasn't funny, so I hated it. I got something totally different than what I was expecting.
Traditional Disney parent death in that one.
Yeah. No, I thought Robin Williams was going to do a voice or something, and it just never occurred. I was waiting.
James Earl Jones dies.
Yeah, no, I know that now. I didn't know that at the time. It was deeply upsetting. So Disney's responsible for a lot of little kid trauma. But the good news is now we're going to be able to see it with real people instead of just cartoons to really drive home the terror. So I think that's a good idea.
We all need a human version of the genie.
That's right. A blue Will Smith. I mean, when I watched the original, I thought, you know who would be great as a big blue genie? Will Smith. And I think we all thought it too. So I think it's just great news. All right. Well, let's talk about some baseball. The Phillies are wrapping up spring training, as Justin mentioned just a minute ago, only a couple of more games. And there's one person who's very excited about it. And that is our new good buddy here at Hittin' Season and the Good Fight podcast feed, the late, great Harry Callis, checking in once again, calling in on the caller line. So let's hear from what Harry has to say this week.
Hey, guys. Our famed broadcaster, Harry Callis here. Now time for the opening lineup brought to you by Prism. Leading off from Yahoo Sports, Liz Rooster. Batting second from the Good Fight, Justin Klug. And batting third, that wily veteran, John Stolness. You know, I've been listening to this podcast for over a year, and I just found out his name wasn't Felsky. Well, here's the quick recap since my last call. Bryce Harper's ankle exploded. Bryce Harper's ankle healed. Mike Trout secured the bag, and Gabe the Babe Kapler still looks great in the uniform. This drop-in has been brought to you by HERS. Make HERS yours. I'm outta here.
So we thank Harry the K once again for checking in, and hopefully he's going to make that an every week thing as people call in on the call-in line. You can check in too. Give us a call, 215-650-7270. As the year goes along, the best calls we will air on either the Sunday night version of Hittin' Season or the midweek version of Hittin' Season, or you'll hear it on Justin and Liz's continued success. Somewhere we'll get, if it's a good phone call and you got something interesting to say, we'll put it up and let your voice be heard. And hopefully Harry the K is able to check in with us every week. Again, 215-650-7270, guys. But as spring training is wrapping up and we're getting ready for the 2019 season officially, some news coming out of spring training. The Phillies have made some decisions on the bullpen. It looks like Victor Arano and his 955.3 ERA is just not going to be good enough to get him on the big league roster this time around. They're going to have him start the season in AAA. So it looks like the back of the bullpen is going to have Adam Morgan and Edubre Ramos in it, along with, let's see, it's going to be an eight-man bullpen. So you're going to have Pat Neshek back there, Dave Robertson back there, Hector Neris, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jose Alvarez is going to be one of the two left-handed options back there. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody also just off the top of my head, but the Phillies made some decisions on that. Also looks like Rhys Hoskins is going to get back into playing some games this week. He's been dealing with a bad shoulder, but it looks like it's good enough that he's going to get back into the starting lineup. And, you know, one of the things I think has really I've really noticed here at the end of spring training here, Justin, as Odubel Herrera has gotten back on the playing field, he has looked fantastic since coming back from his hamstring injury. And there's a good piece, I think Jim Salisbury wrote it for NBC Sports Philadelphia, about how he's been really working on the mental aspect of the game. It seems like it's really, again, this is just spring training, but it seems like Odubel Herrera is ready to open the season like he did last season locked in. It's just a matter of whether or not he can, you know, keep it going during the course of the season. But he looks fantastic right now, Justin.
All you can ask for from Odubel Herrera is what he can do for you in the moment. So I think it's a safe bet. It's a safe route to take to be like, oh, yeah, Odubel Herrera looks great. He does. He looks great. But as we all know, that's a tough idea to trust, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like that's, and being spring training stats, there's that extra bit of hypothetical aspect to them. So I want to see him do as well as anybody, probably more, definitely more than anybody. I want to see.
Yeah, he's your favorite player, man.
Come out looking good, keeping pace with the rest of the big bats in the Phillies lineup. But yeah, I think you gotta just be a little cautious, at worst, and cautiously optimistic at best with Odubel Herrera, at least at first, because it's going to be a minute till we trust his numbers again.
Yep. No doubt. And Liz, I know you're a big Odubel fan. I'm a big Odubel fan. I'm the biggest. Really, you're the biggest, and no doubt about it. Justin's the biggest, his favorite player. but with Odubel Herrera.
Jeez.
Yes.
What?
You want a sticker? I would love a sticker.
Obviously, I would love a sticker. That sounds great.
Gold star.
Hey, Phillies, can you make that happen? Can you send Justin a sticker?
Him and just only. A sticker.
Yeah, just Justin. I mean, right. And Justin,
not
if
like
you want
a sticker from the gift shop, like a custom made sticker mm-hmm. for me.
Maybe if Odubel could design a sticker just for you,
drop it off. Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
I think this
Odubel should design something for us to purchase to show Odubel our love.
Odubel designs Odubel, and he does that well enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm cool with Odubel just kind of, yeah, focusing on doing what he's doing right now, which Liz is actually playing.
Looks fantastic already.
Yeah.
I wonder if he'll cut it before they go north. I hope he doesn't. It looks wild and ridiculous.
I don't want him to change a thing, because right now he is absolutely locked in at the plate.
This would be the worst time to cut his hair.
Yeah, don't do that. At least he hasn't
don't
grown,
Samson
he hasn't
yourself,
grown any
dude.
Unattractive facial hair this year.
No. And that's when he loses me, when the facial hair comes in and I'm just, okay, I can't support a player with unattractive facial hair.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Jason Worth was tough for many years.
It was tough. It was tough. But Liz, anyway, as we're looking at some of these developments at the end of spring training, anything jump out at you as far as players who are performing well here at the end of spring training that maybe when we look at spring training numbers, when we look at spring training results, you kind of have to look at it sideways because, again, like we've talked about on this podcast, you don't know what players are working on stuff. But it really at this point in spring training, guys are just getting ready for the season and they're trying to get as close as they can to mirroring what it is they're going to do in the regular season. So anybody jumping out at you as having a good spring that you're excited about?
I'll be honest, I haven't watched an inning of spring training baseball. I've decided it's too hard for me to get super duper amped up about baseball that doesn't count. But I watched those Bryce Harper home runs from last week about 8 billion times.
They were nice.
That is a conservative estimate. One of them left the stadium. Like,
yeah, I know.
Just the concept of that makes me fan myself. Like, let's just say Bryce Harper, the end of his spring training is excellent. Two thumbs up from Liz.
Now, I mean, I think with Bryce Harper, I'm feeling much better. I wasn't really getting nervous per se, but it does make you feel a lot better to see that he is kind of locked in now, that he does seem to have his timing back. And Justin, I know nobody was really nervous the fact that he was hitless for his first few games. There was some joking about it, but I think for the most part, people realized what was going on. But do you feel any more sense of maybe just a little bit more relief having seen him kind of get a little bit locked in and to kind of know that when opening day comes, he probably is going to be where he needs to be?
You know, we're very just hands-on people, I would say, in Philadelphia, or eyes-on, at least. You know, no one believed Bryce Harper was on the Phillies until we saw him wearing a Phillies uniform. No one believed that he was going to be able to hit the ball because he struggled to open spring training, and then they needed to see him hit a couple of home runs, and they did. I understand it. I do. I mean, we talked about how little those numbers really mean on an earlier episode, but at the same time, yeah, it's great to see Bryce Harper be the sort of Bryce Harper he the Phillies acquired him for. So it's comforting. It's just to know it's there and exists in a visual format, and it's been recorded for all of history. It's better to see him in action and like see that his swing is able to get a ball out of the park like you'd expect. So even though it should come as no surprise, it's always just nice to see.
And he's super loose right now, too. Like, there's a video of him and I think Gene Segura earlier dancing in the clubhouse to some song. Like, it was adorable. Like, everyone's feeling pretty good, it seems. Like, I like it.
Gene Segura he showed up loose. He's been excited since, remember, he was dancing in his car when the Phillies traded for him.
That's right.
He could be in a better place right now.
You feel that, like, that makes me feel so good that he was excited to join the Phillies, like, in a different way than Bryce Harper. Like, Gene Segura was like, oh my God, a team that is good wants me and has traded for me. I've made it out of here alive.
Yeah, because he was with, who did he start his career with? The Diamondbacks, when the Diamondbacks were so-so, and then he went over to the Brewers before the Brewers became good, and then he went over to the Mariners. I mean, he's always been with these teams that are like 500 teams is where he's always played for 500 teams or slightly less than 500 teams, and this is his first chance, I think, to really play for a true contender, and that's what we have in the Phillies, and we're going to get into some of our predictions coming up here in the next segment, but just to kind of put a bow on spring training here, I will say as I'm finishing up, I haven't, like you, Liz, I haven't watched a lot of spring training games. I've been kind of just following a lot of the narratives, though, and looking at some of the box score lines and the highlights, and you know, watching a little bit here and there, and kind of seeing the starting rotation as the weak link of this team, because I'm as I watch Jake Arrieta here in the spring, and as I watch Vince Velasquez here this spring, I do think last year Vince Velasquez did better than the numbers indicate, and Jake Arrieta, I was hopeful that the injury that he had at the end of last year would was one of the reasons why he was struggling towards the end, especially in the last month and a half of the season. But neither of those guys has looked good this spring. However, Nick Pivetta has looked like he is, like, everybody that's writing all of the Nick Pivetta is going to break out pieces this spring. They all look right. They all look accurate. And Gabe Kapler mentioned that made the announcement that it's going to be Nick Pivetta starting game two of the season, Justin, with Jake Arrieta starting the third game. Is that mean? Do you think Nick Pivetta, in the eyes of this team, is now the number two starter? Because I know Gabe Kapler was trying to frame it as, well, we want to have Arrieta for Sunday Night Baseball. I'm not buying that. I think right now the Phillies look at Nick Pivetta and see he has the second best stuff on the team.
I'm actually buying that, but I don't doubt that there's at least some vein of belief in what you just described, that, yeah, Nick Pivetta actually is the number two pitcher on this team. But I don't know. It's so early. Obviously, literally, you can't have an earlier time to be talking
about it. Negative time.
And I do think this is heavily dictated by the idea that, you know, primetime game, people know who Jake Arrieta is. Nobody knows who Nick Pivetta is outside of Philadelphia and probably Washington at this point. Yeah. That being said, they're trusting him enough regardless of why this change has been made. Like, he's still starting the second game of the season. They had other options to put there, regardless of what their motivations were. And they still went with him. And that is really impressive. And before we jump too far ahead and I don't get to say it, you know who's had an awesome spring training, by the way? It was Andrew Knapp.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Phillies almost, the fantasy being that they had stumbled upon this backup catcher who knew how to work walks, get on base, and might like have some tiny bit of power. And then it turned out that no, he couldn't even hit 200 over the course of last season. But this spring, he's hit 344 with a 1025 OPS in 12 games. Like, that's, you know, those are, you know, instinctively, I have to say, those are some spring training numbers. But hey, you know, he's a guy who hit under 200 for all of last year. So
it's a ray of hope. It's a sign that something could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And one of the other things that I think is interesting, one of the spring training battles that we talked about, and I know you guys were probably more upset about it than I was Scott Kingery at third base and Kingery versus Franco at third base. The other day they had Franco at first base and Kingery at third. It looks like the backup plan for Reese Hoskins at first base is going to be Michael Franco at first, which that's not an out of position thing. Franco has played a lot of minor league games at first base, and he has looked good in that position. That's always kind of been, I think, if if Franco's power ever develops and he ever develops as a consistent offensive player, his future likely is as a first baseman. The question is, you know, can you have Franco at first base and have Kingery at third base? Kingery made some nice plays at third this spring. I didn't get to see him a lot there, so I don't know whether... It doesn't seem to me, Liz, as if the Phillies are ready to name Scott Kingery the opening day third baseman. My guess is they're going to stick with Michael Franco at third base. Kingery has looked pretty decent at the plate here at the end of spring training. He had a triple in the game on Sunday. He also had a home run, a couple of home runs this spring, one to the opposite field. It kind of looked like it was maybe a spring training home run. But, you know, I think Kingery, I see a lot of people starting to maybe slowly put a foot back on the Scott Kingery bandwagon, and I want everybody just to calm down because they are spring numbers, but I just wonder what you think of the third base battle that was talked about at the beginning of the spring. I mean, does it seem to you like it's going to be Franco?
I think so. I mean, the whole thing didn't really seem, you know, the battle aspect of it didn't really seem to materialize. It never seemed like anything was different. They said that they were going to have to fight it out, and then no one ever said anything about it again.
Right.
Like then it just disappeared. Like they suddenly realized, oh, I don't really think we could put Scott Kingery in third base full time. I don't think that's something we could do because that's an important position. And despite the defensive upgrade he might present, at least Michael Franco has done it longer. And so, you know, they'll find places for Kingery, I guess. I mean, I still don't know how they're going to do it, but I've also stopped caring.
Last I checked, he was the first backup to every infield position at first base.
That's it. So, he's really their only infield backup.
Yep.
Because they're gonna go into the regular season with Nick Williams and Aaron Altherr in the outfield. They're gonna go with five outfielders, and they're gonna have
God.
And which is crazy when you're talking about having a short bench to begin with. I mean, you're going to have Andrew Knapp as your backup catcher, who could also play some first base for you. You're going to have Nick Williams
You've
and Aaron Altherr.
First baseman, a bunch like
Kingery.
50 or 80 outfielders, and there's one guy behind every infielder. What is happening?
I was going to say, what are the odds that you guys think that we see an outfielder playing in the infield within the first month of the season?
100%. Is there something more than 100%? Because that's what it is. Like, I was just thinking to myself, have either Altherr or Williams played anywhere in the infield before? Like, you just shove him at first base because that's, I guess, where you put everybody who can't play defense. Like, what?
Well, Odubel Herrera started as a second baseman. If and when Roman Quinn is healthy enough, they were playing him at some shortstop last spring just to kind of get him, because that was his original position as well. I don't think either of those guys play those positions well enough to really be a serious option. But again, if you're talking about, you know, a day or two here and there or a week at a time, maybe. But we haven't seen Odubel Herrera at second base in a Phillies uniform. We haven't really gotten enough of a look at Quinn at shortstop. There's a reason those guys were moved to the outfield. And so it is going to be interesting to see how they do that. I think what the Phillies are banking on right now is, unlike last year, they have an everyday eight. There's not going to be a lot of shuttling guys in and out of the lineup this time around. I mean, I think you have Nick Williams start a day here and there for Andrew McCutchen or something like that against a tough right-hander just to keep Williams fresh. Maybe Odubel Herrera sits for a day when Roman Quinn is healthy. But Aaron Altherr's had a really good spring. They don't want to just release him. They can't send him to the minors because he's out of options. So they want to bring him up north because right now he's the backup center fielder. He's really the only guy that can back up Odubel Herrera in center fielder. He's a very good defensive center fielder. Nick Williams has options, but you can't send him down. You know, that would just be demoralizing. It would be wrong. It really would be wrong.
He hasn't earned it.
And what are you going to do? Put Sean Rodriguez on the 40-man roster and knock somebody else off so that you have another backup first baseman, another infielder? That doesn't seem to make sense either. So there's a little bit of a crunch there if you insist on keeping eight bullpen guys. Again, I say go with seven bullpen guys since you're not going to use Vince Velasquez the first time through the order with all the off days, but it doesn't seem as though that's the way Gabe Kapler wants to do it.
Well, speaking of that, I'm sorry,
Sean
go ahead.
Sean Rodriguez making the infield sounds like a very 2017 Phillies thing to do. And we're not watching that team anymore.
No. And he's accepted a minor league assignment. So they've officially decided that he's not going to make the trip up north with the team. So
that's the correct decision.
I just want to say,
I agree with it.
You say that we have a starting eight. How long? I cannot imagine a Gabe Kapler that doesn't tinker. I can't. If he starts the same eight guys 2 days in a row, 3 days in a row, let's not say two, let's say three, within the first week, I'll be shocked. I really will.
Yeah.
He's not, I don't think he does it. I think he starts giving dudes days off and putting Kingery all over the infield.
On the other hand, he's also a religious follower of protocol. So if this is like an order that's come down from higher above him that, look, we're going to do a little less platooning and messing around this year and we want to have a more solid regular lineup, then he's probably going to follow that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, here's the thing. We just don't know enough about Gabe Kapler yet to know what he's going to do with a team.
Seen him
for
a whole, I mean, I guess you're right. We don't know him. We know him well enough, but you said we don't know him well enough to see what he'll do with talent. My guess is that he'll be, you know, minutely more restrained than last year. But I really think that he starts tinkering with this lineup and putting Scott Kingery, you know, all over the place. I just don't see him as a dude who keeps a straight lineup. I can't imagine.
You might be right. You might be right.
Let me ask you guys this.
So freaking annoying. My God.
Let me ask you guys this. When it would come up whether any one of these free agents the Phillies were pursuing this offseason, when it came up that maybe there's a chance he doesn't want to come here because he doesn't agree with Gabe Kapler or like what Gabe Kapler does, or he thinks it'd be a difficult clubhouse. Did any even a little part of you believe that to be true?
Yes.
I did. A little bit. A little bit. Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, not that I thought it was true, but I wouldn't disbelieve it if someone said it.
Yeah. I mean, Gabe Kapler last year was a pincushion, you know? He was a pinata, and his reputation around the game last year, especially during that collapse, which again was just a monumental collapse, it took a hit. And he was very controversial. He did a lot of things that were very unorthodox, and a lot of those moves didn't work out. So yeah, I could certainly understand that. I didn't necessarily believe it was true because there wasn't any proof to it being true. It seemed like a lot of the Gabe Kapler haters, the people who like to pick on Kapler, were kind of jumping to conclusions. But I agree, Justin. I believed it could be true. I just, you know, I didn't like people jumping to that conclusion automatically. And it doesn't seem like the Phillies got a lot of guys to come join this team this year and are pretty excited about being here. So I guess that can all change if things go haywire the first couple months of the season. And we can talk a little bit more about that after the break because we're going to get into our previews, our season predictions, and talk a little bit more about the 2019 season. And we'll touch on the manager and the rest of the team moving forward. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back with Hittin' Season. So we are getting into now our 2019 preview. We're going to talk about the 2019 season here, which gets underway later this week as the Phillies open things up against the Atlanta Braves at Citizens Bank Park. We're very excited to watch this lineup, which has great numbers against Julio Teheran, terrorize that poor soul. And last year, the Phillies really should have beaten Teheran in Atlanta. Aaron Nola outdueled him, but of course, Gabe Kapler pulled him early, and we all know how that opening day went, really started off the season in a negative light. And I think things are going to be a little bit different this time around. And that's one of the things we were talking about right before the break is how Gabe Kapler was going to handle the 2019 season. Justin, as we get into 2019, Kapler is no longer the face of the franchise, which is what he was leading into the offseason. That honor now goes to Bryce Harper and the rest of the players on the team. But I don't think that there is anyone in this organization with more scrutiny on him than Gabe Kapler. This team has to get off to a fast start this year. They can't be 5 to 7 to 10 games under 500 as they enter June. I don't think he can survive that unless there's like a bunch of major injuries here, given how last year went. And I think Matt Klentak has been basically inoculated from being blamed for any issues that go wrong here in 2019 because of the team that he's built, all the different players that they've gone out and gotten. If this team struggles out of the gate, the blame is going to fall on Gabe Kapler, right or wrong. Do you get that sense as well that he is under a tremendous amount of pressure as we start 2019?
Absolutely. And I'm actually, as part of our Phillies spring training preview on The Good Fight, putting something up about just the leadership in the Phillies clubhouse and where Gabe Kapler falls into that right now. And that role is, you know, it's a little more fortified with the talent the Phillies provided, but I do feel like it's tenuous just in regards to he'll be the first person with a crosshair on him if things do go south, because, and I feel like we've mentioned this before, that he's loaded with so much talent now that part of the argument would be, why can't you win with this? This was very expensive.
True.
And it's worth every penny. Why can't you win with this? What did you do? So, you know, as the guy who might be, as we've said, fiddling with the lineup every night in a situation where he probably shouldn't be, yeah, that's going to fall to him. On the other hand, part of the story I'm putting up is about Andy McPhail and the people who are higher up in Gabe Kapler than Gabe Kapler. I mean, I feel like at this point, it's fair for them to feel like they've done their jobs. And for that reason, they can say, like, oh, look, we did our jobs. We gave you the tools to succeed. If you're not succeeding, then we got to think about who's holding the tools. So, I think it's really important that this team sees some success early on, even if it's not just, you know, like winning out of April, just having a winning record. If it's a slow start, like, okay, but if there's any sort of prolonged nature to this, if it's longer than it takes people to forget, then yeah, there's going to be some talk had, I believe, because yeah, why shouldn't it work?
And Liz, at the beginning of the off season, the Phillies said that they were going to have a much stronger clubhouse, that there was going to be more restrictions. It was going to be more a tighter clubhouse as far as, you know, the manager being hands on, but also wanting his players to police the clubhouse. And we found out why last week when the whole Carlos Santana bat smashing stuff came to light, which again put Kapler in a negative light. It was yet another story this offseason in which the Phillies manager was put in a negative light, and It just adds to the pressure here, doesn't it? I mean, this is a season where the Phillies are, the expectations are raised. They're expected to be postseason contenders. And if things don't start off right, there's going to be a lot of questions as to the future of the manager of this team.
I completely agree. I mean, I get why he wants the players to police the clubhouse, but then what is your job? Like, he gets a lot of direction from, you know, the Phillies analytics department, and I'm guessing there are directives from Matt Klentak. Like, if his job isn't clubhouse culture, then it's setting lineups and making pitching decisions. Like, that's what it is. And sometimes that stuff has already been decided. So what is his job? Like, if he can't, he needs to take ownership. Like, I feel like he says the words, you know, this is my responsibility. Mm-hmm. But then he turns around and says, I wanted the players to police the clubhouse and they're going to continue to do that. I'm like, well, then you don't actually take responsibility. Like, where is the responsibility? And that's what's frustrating to me, because, you know, if there's a target on him, it should be, because I'm frustrated with him. I'm frustrated with Gabe Kapler. It's a very short leash for me. I can't take it.
In addition to the on-the-field stuff, he's also just been this jabbing PR hit, like, for a team that should be really celebrating, like, the team they put together this offseason. It should be nothing but jubilant and easily just promoting this team and getting people to come see it. Like, feels like for every positive development, yeah, there's been a multiple little, you know, quiet and unfortunately subdued in some cases, buried by bigger news. But there's always been this kind of dull ache of a, like, what happened there, Gabe, situation that they need to have addressed in some capacity. Whether it's the story that came out about his time in Los Angeles earlier, or a story about his clubhouse where somebody's smashing a TV with a bat. It's like, why do you have to have this little this little negative weight attached to every bit of good news that comes out of this team.
I mean,
and if that continues, then it's like he's failed on multiple fronts.
I mean, until we talk about the Mets later, the team that most recently owned itself before the season even began was the Phillies, because Gabe Kapler can't stay out of the news. Everything is about him.
Yeah, and that's been, you know, that has been, until Bryce Harper came along, he has sucked the oxygen out of the room when it comes to the Phillies. And
how long do the Phillies deal with that? How long should they be willing with that?
Unless more stuff comes out, if he starts off the season on the winning track, then a lot of that stuff will be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And that's we remember last year when the Phillies were, for reasons passing understanding, in first place, despite the fact that they couldn't hit and they were blowing leads every other night. They were still in first place. There was conversation about Gabe Kapler being a potential manager of the year
anything about him. Like, it was a lot of, you know, he's manager of the year, he's making all these great decisions. But again, that clubhouse was locked up tight all last year. People were coming to Kapler's defense because he had been attacked a lot, but no one really said anything of substance about him or his leadership.
That's true. I mean, and I guess that's one of the things to keep an eye on here as we start this season, and to see if the changes in the clubhouse will take effect. But again, it's going to come down to, at this point, unless another big shoe is going to drop with regards to the Dodgers stuff going on out there, it's going to come down to winning and losing here in 2019 with a team that is ready to contend now. And it's going to be his job to see to it. And if it doesn't happen, it's going to be I'm rooting for Gabe Kapler. I mean, he's been on the podcast a couple of times. I would like to see him do well, because if he's doing well, then the team's doing well. And if he has learned from past mistakes on and off the field and has set himself up to do better, and I think and I hope that he has, then great, then fantastic. But, you know, I think Phillies fans are, it's certainly understandable if they're watching the manager with a little bit of skepticism as we start the 2019 season. Anyway, let's jump into some predictions here before we get too much further into this. There's some specific questions that Jay Polinsky, one of our writers for The Good Fight, put out towards us. I think it's going to be published in a piece this week, Justin. Usually it's what we do, a couple days before the season, we put out a predictions piece
feels
or something
right.
like that. Yeah. Okay. So you'll probably see some of this at the Good Fight in a couple of days. But just as far as our predictions go, I'll just run a couple of these by you guys before we get to like division winners and all that kind of stuff. He asked us what our biggest midseason trade acquisition will be for this year. What the Phillies' biggest midseason trade acquisition would be. And I looked at the starting rotation, and I'm not at all convinced Jake Arrieta is going to bounce back. I'm certainly not convinced that Vince Velasquez or Zach Eflin is going to be good enough, and I'm not sure that the AAA guys are going to be good enough. So I think there's a good chance that they trade for a starting pitcher. And if they trade for a starting pitcher, I think Robbie Ray, to me, would be their midseason trade focus anyway. I think that's the guy that they would target to go after, and that'd be the guy I'd probably be the most excited about if they were to add somebody at the trade deadline. Justin, let me go to you. Who do you think is out there that could possibly be a big midseason trade acquisition?
I like Robbie Ray. I thought that was a great choice that if I had thought of before. Well, you filled your predictions in before me, so it was tough not to just farm all your good ideas. I keep tempering my expectations when it comes to the type of pitching this team would potentially lock up in the middle of the season. I have no idea if this guy's even on their radar, but I put Jose Berrios because in Minnesota.
Ah, the Twins young pitcher, yeah.
I felt like he's not projected to do, in fact, he's not projected to maintain the even mediocre success he's had the past 2 years, but he was an all-star last year. At just 24 years old, and the AL Central seems like it's full of teams this year that are very, very eager to try to eat their own heads. And I feel like at some point, this could very well be there could very well be a point in the Twins season where they just start throwing people overboard, throwing stuff off the back of the truck. And if the Phillies come to them with a lucrative enough offer, they could secure their rotation this way. But, you know, that's more out of just kind of seeing some promising components to Jose Berrios, and less so. It's less likely to me, I feel, that the Twins might trade away somebody who even looks to be a little bit promising in their rotation. And like I said, he had a good enough year last year to get some attention. So I feel like somebody like Robbie Ray is probably much more likely, but I thought that would be a more interesting pick from a division that seems very content to burn itself to the ground.
It really is. And that's the thing that might prevent the Twins from trading Berrios, is like that. I'm exaggerating.
It could go either way.
75 yeah. wins could win the division.
You're exactly right. That's what's so dumb about the division. Yeah.
Oh,
just
my goodness.
Just the idea of
gracious.
The Indians trying to sell contracts because they knew they could win with less talent is all you really need to know about the NL.
Cleveland got actively worse. And so, like, if any of those teams can put together like one or two good winning streaks, they're in trouble because, man, like, they've got like a handful of decent pieces, but like Jason Kipnis and Francisco Lindor are starting the season on the injured list.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, and we'll get into the AL Central picks in just a second because I don't feel good about picking anybody in that division.
We can pick no one.
Liz, no. Can we pick no one? Can we leave that vacant? Liz, anybody come to mind for you as far as a potential big midseason trade acquisition for the Phillies?
I would say that you could get a guy like Madison Bumgarner pretty cheap.
Yeah, that's a good name.
I think this is the last year of his contract. I'm pretty sure.
It is?
Yeah, it's the last year of his contract, and so the Phillies wouldn't have to give up much for him, and he would want to go to contender. I think he probably has, I'm going to guess, 10 and 5 rights at this point, if not a full no trade clause in whatever his last contract was. So he can pretty much choose where he goes. And so he would maybe want to go to the Phillies. If they're looking to bolster their rotation, he would say yes to going to a contender and winning, you know, trying to win another ring if the Phillies are in a good enough position.
I agree. I think, and I didn't think about the 10 and 5 rights, Liz, but that's a real good call because he will be able to direct where he wants to go. And the Phillies, is there a team as well, I'm sure there are, but I can't think of a team right now that doesn't have more juice to it. Getting on the cover of Sports Illustrated, you know, is pretty cool. And everybody's talking about the Phillies. Yeah, great cover. Great cover with those
Aaron
four
Nola
guys
smiling
on the cover.
And laughing. What a great picture. Like someone, I think I saw on Twitter, someone said, he looks horrible. He's like laughing. And like, do you not understand that was the point? Because he never, you know.
He never laughs. He never smiles. You never see it.
Like I said, he's sort of like Roy Halladay. And like on the mound and when he's talking about, you know, when he's being, you know, serious about baseball, he's very serious. He's very reserved. Yeah. But, you know, he's a normal person. He has emotions. He smiles and laughs like you or I.
Yep. Yep. No, absolutely. I think that's interesting that they got him in a moment where he was obviously looking at something shiny that was making him
happy. Not a raccoon.
I don't know. Maybe his part. You saw like fireworks in the sky or something. You know. I love Aaron Nola. I love how boring he is. It's just great.
He's not all right. Breakout man. He's more.
No, he's not. breakout Phillies prospect. I picked Alec Bohm. And I think that's mostly because I want it to happen. Because, you know, if you're looking at a long-term third base solution for the Phillies and you don't believe in Michael Franco, and I just don't believe in Michael Franco anymore, Alec Bohm is really the guy. He's the guy you're pinning your hopes on, and coming out of college seemed like a guy who'd be a fast riser. If you get a good season out of him in the minors, he could be on the big league roster in 2020. And so he didn't play enough pro ball last year to really indicate that he was ready to break out. But number 3 overall pick, you're really hoping that that guy is going to move up through the minors quickly and be a quality Major League Baseball player for you. So I'm going with third baseman Alec Bohm as my breakout Phillies prospect this year. Liz, how about you? Breakout Phillies prospect for you this year.
I'll take Adam Haseley. Is that how you pronounce his name? Adam Haseley?
Yep. Adam Haseley.
I will take him. I like that pick a lot. I think he's shown a lot of potential. This could be a great year for him. And so I would like that. I wish I had more to say about him because I'm eager to watch him in the minors this year. I'm eager to, you know, I have a subscription to MILB TV. you know, I live in Ohio. We try to see the, you know, whenever the Philly teams make their way through the Midwest, we try and drive out to see them. So it'll be nice to spend some time watching him. I hope he has a great year.
Well, what'll help is playing in Reading. It certainly doesn't hurt your numbers playing in Reading most of the season. I think that's where he's starting off, is with the Fightins in Reading, PA.
Excellent confidence builder.
Yep, that's a good call. The Colorado Rockies of minor league baseball. Justin, your breakout Phillies prospect.
Did he hit 111 through spring training this year? Yes, he did. Did he hit 186 in the Arizona Fall League? You betcha. Do I still think Archimedes Gamboa could break out this year? Absolutely. If not only for his magnificent name, but
it's the best.
Also because it'd be cool to imagine, you know, we're talking about Scott Kingery being among the Phillies' only options as an infield backup. You know, he's a second base, he's a middle infielder that I would love to see become more than the 186 hitter he was in 20 games this fall. But hey, it's a small sample size. If you want a bigger one, if you look at Clearwater in 114.
Justin, you have
Justin is selling this pick. You are selling this pick
man. This is a Justin pick. He loves hard luck cases. You do.
I think I can fix people. It's a problem.
You do. I think you can fix them with your love. And it's what we love about you.
Yeah, no, it's a good pick. He's a top prospect
Orioles
for a reason.
Around,
you know,
him
he's
last
a great
year
glove.
Thinking about the the Adam Jones trade, when the Orioles came poking around, it was Franklin Coulombe and it was Archimedes Gamboa they were interested in. So he raised some eyebrows on occasion.
Orioles
like him, so that's not a bad pick.
I'll say that they didn't have the most sophisticated scouting department. or anything department. I'm sorry, Justin. I know that you're a fan.
If that sleeping guy with an Orioles hat pulled down over his face thinks Archimedes Gamboa is worth a look, he's worth a look.
Oh, those poor O's. They're going to lose 115 games this year.
At least, probably more.
Man. Yeah. All right, let's run through these quickly here. Does Gabe Kapler make it through the season? Justin.
You know, you're making me rethink a lot of these. I held fast on the other two you asked, but I'm going to throw a no out there. Actually, you know, the more we talk about it, the more factors are in play here, the little bit that has to go wrong just seems like it could more and more potentially go wrong. You know, the Phillies don't have to be bad for him to not make it through the rest of the season. It's sort of set up like that. The dramatics of it all kind of factor into a decision like that. At this point, like I said, it could be about optics. It just could be by the end. Based on what we don't know, there could be story generated that just tips the scales in the wrong direction for him, I think. And it's a pretty sensitive scale for Gabe Kapler this year. So just to spice things up, I'll say no.
All right, Liz, how about you?
I also say
come on.
The Phillies.
Wow.
The Phillies spend $1 million dollars on this lineup. And if Gabe Kapler can't make it work, they're going to find someone who can.
I'm going to switch to yes, just so we're not two no's and a yes. Because, John, I think you're a yes.
No, I'm a yes, because I think the team will play well this year. And I don't anticipate anything coming down the pike off the field necessarily. I mean, who can tell? Who knows? You know what I mean? Trying to
There's
guess
more
that
out
is,
there.
Is pointless. Yeah,
There's
that's
more
what I've
out
heard.
There, you know, I've heard whispers, you know, Nick Francona has a Twitter account. But, you know, you make a good point that it's at this point, if things haven't come out, there's a reason they haven't. So
I'm going to say yes. So we've got, what's your official answer, Justin?
I'm going to say a slight nod from across the room.
Okay.
Coward.
Yeah. Have a take, coward. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Let's see. What's another good one here? We'll do one more out of these. Cause we don't want to, this is a good one. The first Philly to get thrown out of a game this year. This is a great question. Justin, who do you think is going to be the first Philly to get thrown out of a game this year?
Well, I put the obvious answer, Bryce Harper, because it's like driving a convertible. Sometimes you're just going to attract tickets And I think he's going to get a couple of, he'll get at least one ticket because he's also an emotional player and he's an intense player. And he's somebody that people in Philadelphia are going to be excited to see go nuts because we never got that Gabe Kapler ejection that we wanted to see last year.
Yeah,
so,
no, we didn't.
You know, we saw him get mad a couple of times, but we never got it. So I think it's time for the new face of the franchise to take that mantle. And he's gotten ejected plenty of times before.
Yeah.
As with both of those factors I mentioned contributing to the incident. So, yeah, I think he's definitely your best pick to get kicked out early.
Liz, what do you think?
I'm not going to say Bryce Harper. So I'm going to say Rhys Hoskins, who almost, who almost got himself thrown out a number of times last year. And most of the time, Gabe Kapler would step in front of him and make sure he didn't get thrown out. I remember at the Phillies BP event, he said, like, that's my job, is to make sure the players don't get thrown out. So I think at some point he's going to fail because, I mean, who knows why.
What is the most profane thing you think an umpire hears out of Rhys Hoskins' mouth?
Oh, I think he gets, you know, he can sling it, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't think Rhys is a choir boy. That's not the impression I get from him. I think Rhys can mix it up.
I get normal dude from Rhys Hoskins. Yeah. I don't get giant, you know, non-swearing farm boy like I get from Aaron Judge.
Right. Yeah. So I'm with you. I think Rhys Hoskins is a great call. Bryce is a great call. I went a little unorthodox with my call. I said Vince Velasquez because I'm not I am a little concerned that, you know, Velasquez is going to have an iffy year. And he's a guy who I think has trouble controlling his emotions on the mound, that I worry there's a game where he's getting ripped apart and maybe he's about to lose his job in the start in the rotation. And he loses it on an umpire who's squeezing him one night and gets tossed. So that's where I was coming from with my Vince Velasquez pick, but I actually kind of like your guys' calls a little bit better. But just to be different, I'll go with Vince Velasquez. There'll be more of those kind of predictions on the piece when it's coming out. And when we come back, we're going to give you our predictions for playoff teams, playoff outcomes, and the end of season awards, and also make fun of the Mets real quick as well. All that's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. All right, before we get into the New York Mets here, let's run down our predictions for 2019, our formal predictions for playoff teams, division winners, wild card teams. We'll also go over playoff outcomes and the end of season awards. So let's see, Justin, who wins the National League East?
I put the Nationals. I didn't feel good about it emotionally, but...
You shouldn't.
I feel like putting the Phillies in that slot or any of the other... recently competitive teams in the NL East. I guess maybe I'm somebody who needs to see that the division is as good as we think it's going to be before I decide that there's been a change of the winds in the NL East. And as we've been saying all winter long, the Nationals are a team that didn't have to do much to stay good, and they still went and got Patrick Corbin as well as other key additions this offseason. They didn't sit tight like they were a team that felt like they had the division locked down. So I'm still willing to put the Nationals at the top of the NL East while they'll might have a harder time getting there. This would probably be what I would call the last gasp of this Nationals current setup.
Liz, how about you? NL East
strong
winner.
Agree with Justin across the board. Like wow. I can't put the Phillies there. Do you understand? Does that everybody understand why?
I do. I went the other way. I took the Phillies.
I can't do it yet. Yeah. They need to prove it to me.
I understand that. I did take the Phillies just because I couldn't live with myself.
Listen, I respect that choice. I respect it.
The National League Central, and by the way, just on the National League East, I know everybody thinks that this is going to be a four-team race. I'm here to tell you, the more I think about the Braves and their pitching staff and the Mets and what's going on there, I'm not so sure this isn't a two-team race this year. I think the Braves and Mets could both be really disappointing along with the Marlins. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if you have the Nats and the Phillies are both like 90-plus win teams and the Braves and the Mets are both like 7-8 games behind these two teams.
Yeah, I think any of these teams could be susceptible to that. I think they're finding themselves maybe not exactly the same spot, but certainly the same phase. Regardless of how they got there, with the Braves, like, you know, very progressing with their really talented prospects. The Phillies assembling this super team, and the Mets kind of falling ass backwards into some reachable resources that were made available to them. Regardless, I feel like, yeah, that any of these teams are susceptible to just like not playing as well in some key spots that they were presumed to have like set up. So I think that's perfectly reasonable conclusion to draw, that the Phillies and Nationals might be the only real threats in this division. But I think when we view them as a more, when we view it as a more interesting division, it's because right now, before the season has started, you could legitimately say it could be a four-team division or a four-team race in this division, just based on all the action that's been going on. It's also just been a very desert of an offseason, it felt like, as far as acquisitions and trades and signings go. But the NL East was the most active division. So I think from the outset, it's certainly got the most exciting look going forward. But yeah, it could not be as interesting as we thought it was going to be.
Looking at the National League Central, this again could be mostly a three-team race. And the Reds are interesting, but I don't think they're as much of a contender as the Cubs, Cardinals, and Brewers. And as far as my National League Central winner, I've got the Cubs winning the division, although the Cardinals just, they signed Paul Goldschmidt to an extension this week, and they're a team everybody really likes. I just can't get behind the Brewers starting rotation. That Brewers starting rotation, I don't care what kind of what their bullpen looks like. Even if they get Craig Kimbrell, they're going to lose Corey Knebel for a little while. I don't like the Brewers' rotation. I'm going to take the Cubs to win the NL Central. Liz, how about you?
I'm taking the Brewers. I think if their rotation does not work out, they'll be on the phone to, Dallas Keuchel in a minute. I think they will. I think that's a team that really wants to win, and I think they're so close to being dominant. They're so close to being able to actually repeat. They don't want to. I hope they don't let that go, because if their rotation sucks the first, first time through, second time through, someone get Dallas Keuchel on the phone immediately.
Yeah, I think that makes that's a perfect fit. I just don't know, if he solves all their problems either. That whole rotation. I mean, their ace is Julius Chacin. I mean, I hear you. Their offense and their bullpen is amazing. And last year it was good enough to get them into the playoffs. Justin, NL Central winner for you.
I think there's so many red flags with the Brewers. There's the rotation. There's just last year they were a team that weren't they like the definitive new Moneyball team that it just seems like such a fragile blueprint to run your just everyday roster operations by. But they also have Mike Moustakas, who has never played second base in the major leagues, I think.
You're right.
Second base, starting second base. At second base. So that's interesting. Just throwing that out there. And a lot of their good fortune from last year came from guys who you don't necessarily have the evidence yet that they're year-to-year performers. It was a lot of just like good patches from players, from mediocre players lining up at the same time. You also had a blur of Christian Yelich playing some of the best baseball of the season. You had Lorenzo Cain looking really good in their outfield. And then their other outfielders, Ryan Braun, who is always a threat of some kind. And then they signed Yasmani Grandal. So like I'm into the Brewers, and part of me I'd rather see the Brewers win that division than the Cubs. And they're just a more fun and interesting team. So I'm kind of just curious to see how they build on last year's success. Cause like I've said, I think that there's some support pillars that could use some fortification.
So you're taking the Brewers to win the division?
Brewers, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't
all
pick
right.
the Cubs. They did nothing. They don't deserve.
They really didn't do anything.
They don't deserve even my pick. They deserve nothing.
I for me, I have the Brewers third. I would have taken the Cardinals if I wasn't going to take the Cubs. But I hear what you're saying. I love the Brewers as a team. I think that's a fun group. National League West. I've got the Dodgers winning the National League West. I know that's not exactly a creative pick.
No,
but I think, I think they're the most logical selection there. Justin, how about you?
I went with the Rockies, just because it seems like they're, I don't know. I just like what I've seen out of them. I love that Nolan Arenado got locked up there. I'm not saying that necessarily that deal has any immediate impact on the season ahead of them, but, they really, they showed they can compete in this division with the teams that have had the most traditional success there last year. And I don't know, they're another team that doesn't have it all entirely figured out, but I like the pieces they have in place. And I want to see them start building towards being a regular competitor in the NL West, for which a division for which the door is going to be open, I think, in the next few years for them to really just become the one of the definitive teams in that division. So, I went with the Rockies.
And Liz, did you agree with me? You said
Dodgers? With the Dodgers. But I'll jump right into NL Wildcard because I chose the Rockies and the Phillies.
Okay, Rockies and Phillies. I've got Nationals and Cardinals as my wild card teams. Justin?
I have Phillies and Dodgers. So at some point making these stupid picks, I knew I only had room for one team out of the Cubs and Dodgers. So apparently I don't have the Cubs making the playoffs, which does feel silly.
That's fair, though. You know, if you Darvish doesn't bounce back, and I don't know what you're going to get out of Cole Hamels for a full season, that's a team that could be in trouble. I mean, I can totally see that.
They deserve to be knocked off division. Their cocky perch, or at least Theo does, because I hate the Cubs so much these days, really, from their management, their front office. They're so obnoxious. They deserve to lose.
Joe Madden's final season. Get the T-shirts, everybody.
That guy.
I know you do. American League East champions. Justin, who do you have winning the AL East? It's a two-team race there.
Yeah, I went with Red Sox. This is I love how this division is just like on the top of the marquee for baseball, and it really Here we are again, another year of the Red Sox and Yankees, while everybody else is just bam, 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 in the background. What? And like the added component to this is the stuff surrounding the Rays being an absolutely terrible organization, but still getting like pats on the back. Like I hate what's going on down there. So yeah, I went with the Red Sox.
The entire American League is boring. Mm-hmm. Like we can go through our picks quickly because there were barely any battles. Because whoever doesn't win the AL East is going to be the first wild card pick. Almost.
Let me ask you guys this: does anyone not have the Indians winning the AL Central?
I do because I hate them. Again, this is a spike pick, and I chose the Twins not that because I think the Twins can do it, but because they deserve it more.
I had the Indians. Yeah. I have the Indians and I have the Yankees winning the East and the Indians winning the Central. You're right. It's because the AL Central
is a really boring league. Looking at my picks, really I'm boring. Like, yeah, obviously. Okay.
I mean, we all have the Astros winning the AL West, right? I mean, yeah,
mm-hmm, there are realistically five good teams.
There are. You're right.
There are five good teams in the American League. You look over at the National League, there are 10. 10 out of 15 teams have an actual shot at winning something. Like, even the Padres are in it, in a way, because they've got Manny Machado. And, like, they could capture lightning in a bottle like the Brewers did.
Man, I had the Padres on this somewhere at one point, and I took them off, but I wanted to. Liz, I wanted to pull the trigger on the Padres.
Like, no one.
Yeah, they're just a little too far away.
The American League this year, it doesn't deserve it because no one over there did anything. All of the action with signing players came from the National League. They're the only people who want to win. It's actually competitive. It's really. I wish people were talking about this more because the difference is so stark.
Well, I think the three best teams in baseball are in the American League, and then it's like 10 National League teams after that, which is crazy when you think about it. But as far as American League wildcard teams, I got the Red Sox and the A's. I had trouble coming up with that second wildcard team. I think the A's are probably the best bet to because I'm not a Rays guy. I don't think the Rays are going to be able to duplicate what they did last year. But Liz, how about you? What about your American League wildcard teams?
The Rays don't want to duplicate what they did last year. They really don't. Yeah. I picked the A's too because, I mean there might be another option, but again, the Rays don't deserve it. So this is another spite pick. It could be them. I just don't want it to be.
Okay. Justin, you're two AL. Well, I mean, obviously you're going to take the Red Sox or the Yankees for one of them. And what about the other one?
I think everything you guys are saying about the Rays is true. I picked the Rays.
I love the chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be chaotic. And that's the thing is, like, there's no great second wild card selection in the American League. Nothing that you feel good about anyway. Arts. Yeah, right. Exactly. So let's pick our National League Championship Series. I have the Phillies. I know. I don't know what I mean, this is just a homer excited fan in me, but I have the Phillies beating the Dodgers in the National League Championship Series. Liz, how about you?
I have the Phillies losing the wild card because it still feels too early for them to really make a dent.
Yeah, it probably
is. If only because of their pitching. I think that might end up emerging as an issue, as everyone has said on this podcast a number of times today. So, yeah, I have the Phillies losing, and then I have the Rockies beating the Dodgers because I like the Rockies a lot.
All right, Justin?
I have the Phillies beating the Nationals because I looked at this at what could be the most gratifying series to watch for me personally, and that's what it would be. In the AL, did we do the AL yet?
No, that's up next. Go ahead.
Well, in the AL, I have the Red Sox going over the Indians.
I got to tell you, a Phillies Nationals National League Championship Series in which the Phillies beat the Nationals, it would make my son cry. So I'm not rooting for that scenario. I'll be honest with you. Anybody put Phillies and Nationals in the National League Championship Series? I've got the Astros over the Yankees in the ALCS. Liz, how about you?
I have Red Sox over Astros.
Okay, so Liz, what's your World Series matchup and who's your champ?
So try to go back and remember what I picked. It would be Rockies.
Well, you had the Rockies, right? You had the Rockies.
Rockies and Red Sox, which I think would be kind of fun because no one really knows the Rockies and everyone knows the Red Sox, so who cares? But if the Red Sox make it to the World Series, I feel like they win.
All right. I'm not going with the Red Sox. It's just been so long since a Major League Baseball team repeated as champion. I think the Astros get back over the hump, and I think they beat the Phillies in the World Series for another title. Justin, how about you?
Man, you want Astros over Phillies so we can draw up the old NLCS narratives that everybody's gonna love writing about.
That's right.
I have the Red Sox over the Phillies just because, Liz, I think this team, if everybody like is working at normal functional levels, I think this team is better than a wild card team, but maybe not a team that can win the World Series. But of course, all you got to do is get in to the playoffs and then just hope for the best. But I do think this is more than a team that loses in the wild card game. That being said, this team, as I'm looking at it right now, would stand no chance against the Red Sox from last year.
No, not a chance. Not a chance. Well, we don't have time to get into our MVPs and Cy Youngs and all that kind of stuff. So keep an eye out on that at The Good Fight when our predictions pieces come out and you can see who we pick for all that. But I wanted to make sure before we finished up to talk about the Mets and what's going on there. Noah Syndergaard came out and just blasted Mets management because of what's going on over the next few days. They're finishing up at Port St. Lucie, their spring training schedule. Then they've got to travel to Sarasota for a spring training game. Then they're going to make the Mets go to Syracuse, New York for a workout day, a two-hour workout day, which I think takes place on Monday or Tuesday of this week. I forget exactly which day it is.
For the fans at their new affiliate, Mickey Callaway,
right?
Like he had anything to do that day other than show up.
Yeah. So the Mets have a new AAA affiliate. It's going to be based out of Syracuse, and they want to have Mets players up at the Carrier Dome in order to draw, make fans, bring fans out, get fans interested in the organization. Here's the problem: the Mets did not provide enough money for Syracuse to properly let these players work out. So Noah Syndergaard is beside himself because he's thinking I think his quote was, "This is not something a championship team does. It's ridiculous not only to send them there, but that they're not giving them the proper equipment to prepare for the season. Instead of sending them to New York to get ready for the season, here's what he said. He said, I'm sure the amenities in Syracuse aren't the best for a Major League Baseball team to have one last workout before the regular season starts. It was hysterical, Liz.
Him
going off on the team like this.
The sarcasm, lots of deadpan.
Yeah.
When we say this might not be a four-team race, Maybe the team where the guy ate a bunch of undercooked chicken and made himself sick, or the team where like one of the star pitchers is, you know, massaging his temples and going, I just want to go home. Maybe the team that's struggling to come up with a contract for the best pitcher in baseball. I don't know. Maybe it's that team that's not going to be part of this four-team rumble we keep imagining in the NL East.
Why would Jacob DeGrom want it? Like, at this point, they're the team is cheap, which we all know. They're very cheap. They hired his former agent to be their GM.
And how is this deal not getting done?
And insist that he will have nothing to do. He will recuse himself from all negotiations. I'm sure no one will ever talk to him about Jacob DeGrom within the organization. I'm sure that will totally be true of the Mets, who have had at least one, or if not two, women sue them for sexual harassment. I'm sure there's nothing untoward going on there. Like, why would Jacob DeGrom want to stay?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would. I mean, it's a great question. I mean, you have the whole rest of Major League Baseball to choose from if you're Jacob DeGrom and you hit free agency. Staying in New York, playing for that franchise makes absolutely no sense. And Syndergaard, when he was talking to reporters about it, he was saying, where are we going again? We're going to Sarasota and then to Syracuse. And then you'd think we'd go to New York to get, as adults, our things and our affairs in order. But no, we've got to go to Syracuse first. And then he channels a little Allen Iverson with the practice thing. He says, he was asked, if you had gone to the city before opening day, what would you do with the time? He said, probably get my apartment set up roots, set up shop, get accustomed to that way of living. It's kind of a shock going from early wake up to night games. And it doesn't have to be New York, just not Sarasota and then Syracuse. That doesn't make any sense. And we're not even playing a game. We're having a workout. You know, we're talking about practice.
It's so dumb.
I mean, what are the Mets doing? I mean, it's just beyond ridiculous what they're doing and just sabotaging them. I've never seen a team self-sabotage themselves like this. It's crazy.
In regards to DeGrom, I mean, one thing we didn't talk about tonight was Mike Trout's extension. And part of the reason he gave for signing that was because he saw how the free agent process went this offseason. So if Mike Trout doesn't want to test free agency, then you got to think it looks pretty bad to a lot of other players who are on that upper tier of talent who could, you know, in the past couple of years, past every year, gotten a big payday. And that's what made free agency so enticing. But like with Jacob DeGrom, it's like, it's either stay with the Mets or test these free agency waters that looked utterly terrible and interminable this offseason.
The Mets, the undercooked chicken of baseball teams.
Oh, man. And that's where we got to end it, because that's a beautiful way to describe the Metropolitans. And I agree. I think this is a franchise that made some improvements this offseason and had us a little scared for a little while there. But we know they're going to be the Mets. You know, the Phillies just have to beat them this year. The Mets were the Mets last year. We just couldn't beat them. I think that's going to change this year. I think as we're getting ready here for 2019, the Phillies will be able to handle business against New York and the undercooked chicken of the Major League Baseball world, as you put it, Liz. That's beautiful. Listen, guys, any final thoughts before we wrap up? Justin, Liz, any final thoughts?
Bryce Harper is a 273 career hitter at Citi Field. Not his best numbers. Certainly not his Philadelphia numbers, but solid numbers. I think crushable Mets numbers. He's got an 877 OPS and 12 home runs there. So
that'll
I'm
help.
Comfortable. But then again, you know, half these games he's going to be playing the Mets at Citizens Bank anyway.
That's right. Liz, any final thoughts for you as the opening day, as opening day is just days away?
Bring me opening day. I'm ready for it.
Yeah,
I've missed baseball so much.
Yep, real games that count. I have a hard time with spring training games too, because I know they don't count. I'm also not getting much out of watching guys and seeing the results. We need these regular season games to get here, and it's almost here, gang. The 2019 Philly season is almost here. Get excited! You've got a good baseball team on your hands. Woo-hoo! This is a team that should be a pennant contender this year. They have money to spend at the deadline if they need to add any additions, and they've got a ton of talent. They've got the face of baseball on this team and a ton of other talent in that lineup and in the starting rotation. Baseball is back in Philadelphia, so enjoy it, Phillies fans. You waited a long time. You waited through a long slog to get back to this. The rebuild is over. Contention is here, and it all gets underway. We made it. We made it to the end. We made it to the end, and the rest of our lives begins this week when the Atlanta Braves come to Philadelphia for the opening three-game series at Citizens Bank Park. So, folks, we will be with you all season long to take you through what we hope will be a fantastic 2019 season. You can also hear Justin and Liz on their podcast, Continued Success, where they'll be chronicling this season as well as the 2009 season as the team celebrates the 10th anniversary of that fantastic season. And, of course, you can hear Justin and Trevor Strunk on the Dirty Inning if you subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. And don't forget, as we go through the season, you're going to be fired up. You're going to want to leave us a message, and you're going to want to get on the podcast. Call 215-650-7270. That's the Hittin' Season hotline number, 215-650-7270. Again, we'll play the best messages on the podcast each and every week. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.